It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this 10th day of February 2021, Trump Trial 2, Day 2. Does that make it 2.2? Yeah, this is version 2.2 and the trial's still in beta. Hi, I'm Robin, and, well, if you'd like to be part of the merry band of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that makes the live portion, the live program, so much more fun, run on over to headon.live and click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you'll be immediately greeted by early arriver Squeaky and capably moderated by pinch hit. Longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. It's entirely possible that pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve, will be along presently. He had said that he might be a little bit late today, so, yeah. So, like I said, it is Wednesday. Ordinarily, it would be prayer meeting Wednesday, but I have a feeling we're going to be way too busy with impeachment stuff. We will have another prayer meeting Wednesday on the front porch to augment our understanding of what is taking place today. We'll get that going here in a little bit. Yeah. And if you'd like to be part of the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable conversation for day two of the Senate trial, jump on in. The button is there at headon.live. It'll take you right into the chat room. And, I kind of hope we can find a little bit of time for some fun stuff, because I got a real Lulu for us here this prayer meeting Wednesday. It comes out of Iran, and it's restaurant quality stupid, no doubt about it, and just begs to be shared. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, 999. 10-4 rubber duck. And fundraising goal for this evening is $660. That's almost 666. It was 670, but it came down because Jessica up in Minnesota got us started earlier today and sent along a lovely message, having heard the end of the program last night where Roger was talking about driving one's triumph today. Roger will be late at best to the program because he's honoring the founder of Triumph Motor Cars by taking it out today. And Jessica got us started. Six to celebrate my 6 years of owning my 1975 Triumph TR7. And I love the little coincidences that populate our community. I had mentioned that as a teenager, the first car that ever really caught my eye was the Triumph TR7. And I wanted one badly, and of course my father was not going to turn me loose in anything like that. he being convinced that he would not have a kid anymore if he did that. He may have been right. I don't know. But Jessica has a TR7 and has said that when she gets it completely refurbished and everything, that I'm invited for a ride if I can ever get up to Minnesota, and I will take her up on that. Thanks to our subscribers for the 10th day of the month. Thank you very kindly to Paul from Parts Unknown. Thank you to Judith. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you, all of you, so very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. Like I said, we're at $660 to get the program fully funded so far this week. That would be $60 to finish Monday, and then yesterday and today, so $660, and that gets us in fairly good shape. So, to see what we think of this impeachment proceeding today. I watched and listened when I wasn't. I was listening when I was driving, and watching would not have been a good idea. Whilst I was running errands, going down to the settlements for provisions. And I thought we might check in with the proceedings here for a couple of minutes.
This security video from 2:56 p.m. shows the mob in the House of Representatives wing on the second floor of the Capitol.
Eric Swalwell speaking.
Insurrectionists who are still inside the building are fighting with the police, who are overwhelmed and trying to get them out.
The videos today have just been breathtaking in there.
Throughout this presentation,
damnation.
We have been very careful to not share where members of Congress were taken on the paths they followed to get out and off the floors. But that very issue was under discussion by the insurrectionists themselves. One example comes from an FBI affidavit, which stated that a leader of a militia group known as the Oath Keepers received messages while he was at the Capitol. The leader was given directions to where representatives were thought to be sheltering and instructions to, quote, turn on gas, seal them in. And as you know, the threat to the Senate was no less than that of the members of the House. The mob approached the Senate with the same purpose, fulfilling President Trump's goal of stopping the count, delaying the certification of the Electoral College votes of the American people. As you heard from Manager Plaskett, Vice President Pence was moved away from the area near the Senate chamber around 2:25 p.m. By that time, rioters had breached several areas close to this chamber, and they were flooding the hallways just outside and nearby. The Senate chamber was not evacuated until 2:30 p.m. The mob had been in the building for more than 15 minutes. This new security footage of the senators and staff leaving the chamber will be displayed on the screens. It is silent.
Meanwhile, Josh Hawley is sitting in the gallery of the Senate with his feet up, ignoring the proceedings. No kidding, really.
You cannot see it in this footage, but quick-thinking Senate floor staff grabbed and protected the electoral ballots that the mob was after. Those of you who were here that day will recall that once you left the Senate floor, you moved through a hallway to get to safety. That hallway was near where Officer Goodman had encountered a mob and led them upstairs and away from the Senate chamber. You know how close you came to the mob. Some of you, I understand, could hear them, but most of the public does not know how close these rioters came to you. As you were moving through that hallway, I paced it off. You were just 58 steps away from where the mob was amassing and where police were rushing to stop them. They were yelling. In this security video, you can see how the Capitol Police created a line and blocked the hallway with their bodies to prevent rioters at the end of the hall from reaching you and your staff.
Sorry about the dead air. I've never seen this before. This is chilling. That business about turn on gas, they didn't just want to asphyxiate and kill people in the Capitol. They wanted to blow it up.
Because this is security footage that you have not seen before, I want to play it again.
You can play it 100 times, Representative Swalwell.
The top of the screen is the other end of that hallway where the mob has amassed and the officers are rushing to protect you.
This may be the closest the American people ever get to actually finding out exactly what happened that day. I wonder how many are watching. But Josh Hawley doesn't care. He's shuffling his papers.
Additional security footage shows how Leader Schumer and the members of his protective detail had a near miss with the mob. They came within just yards of rioters and had to turn around. Here in this new video, you see Leader Schumer walking up a ramp. Going up the ramp with his detail, he'll soon go out of view.
You know they're Democrats because they're wearing masks.
Seconds later, they return and run back down the hallway, and officers immediately shut the door and use their bodies to keep them safe. At 2:45 p.m., shortly after senators were ushered to safety from the Senate floor, insurrectionists reached this Senate gallery. The following video was filmed by a New Yorker reporter. Minutes later, the insurrectionists invaded and desecrated the Senate floor. These vandals shouted and rifled through the desks in this room. They took pictures of documents and of themselves, celebrating that they had taken over the floor and stopped the counting of Electoral College votes.
Let me just get a snap of that.
Yeah, I took a picture.
Hey, how did y'all get down there? We're down the stairs.
This is, look, here, look.
Ted Cruz's objection to the Arizona.
This is his objection. He was going to sell us out all along.
Really?
Look, objection to counting electoral votes of the state of Arizona.
Can I get a photo of that?
Wait, no, that's... Oh, no, that's... Okay. All right.
He's with us.
There's gotta be something here. We can fucking use against these scumbags.
Grenade for the phone, man!
little shithead rifling through a notebook that he probably can barely read.
No, this is good stuff.
Larry Brock, who was arrested for his role in the insurrection, was photographed on the Senate floor wearing a helmet, tactical gear, and carrying flex cuffs. This man, also in the Senate gallery, is Eric Munchell. Like Brock, he was dressed in what appears to be tactical gear, also holding up flex cuffs. If the doors to this chamber had been breached just minutes earlier, imagine what they could have done with those cuffs. After insurrectionists occupied the Capitol and stopped the joint session from counting the votes, the Capitol was in lockdown for 5 hours. As long as it took to get back to the Capitol, to get back to the certification of the election, it could have been so much longer. Or we might not have been able to have resumed at all. As horrific as it was, 140 officers injured, three officers who ultimately lost their lives, we all know that awful day could have been so much worse. The only reason it was not was because of the extraordinary bravery of the men and women of the Capitol Police and the Metropolitan Police Departments. For hours and hours, these insurrectionists were in hand-to-hand combat with these brave men and women. Like some of you, I come from a law enforcement family. My dad was a cop. My two brothers, my little brothers, are cops who walk the beat today. I'm proud of them. And like in every law enforcement family, when we hang up the phone, we don't only say, I love you, we say, be safe. So let's focus now on the attack and what it was like for the officers defending the Capitol that day. And again, I want to warn you that the following audio and videos are graphic and are unsettling. But it's important that we understand the extent of what occurred. Here's an audio recording from the radio traffic of the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department describing the violence.
Cruiser 50, I copy. We're still taking rock, bottles, and pieces of the flag and metal poles. Cruiser 50, the crowd is using munitions against us. They have bear spray in the crowd. Bear spray in the crowd. DSO, I need a re-up up here.
You hear the officer describe they're using munitions. They, the rioters, are using munitions against us. This video shows how the sprays that were described were used against the officers. In a separate Metropolitan Police Department radio traffic recording, you can hear an officer when he realizes that the insurrectionists had overtaken the police line.
We lost the line. OMPD, pull back! OMPD, pull back up to the upper deck! OMPD, pull back to the upper deck! ASAP! OMPD, come back to the upper deck! Upper deck! Cruiser 50 has braked! 1033! I repeat, 1033 has from the Capitol! We've been braked and we've lost the line!
The MPD officer calls out 1033. That's the code for emergency. Officer in need of assistance. His words, we've lost the line. Hours after members of the House and Senate had left this area, on the west front of the building, the mob continued to grow, continued to beat the officers as they tried to get in. In this new security video, you can see the mob attacking officers with a crutch, a hockey stick, a bullhorn, and a Trump flag. I want to show you that same attack from the officer's perspective from his body camera footage. This body camera footage is from 4:27 p.m., over 2 hours from when the Capitol was first breached. The attack on police that afternoon was constant. Metropolitan Police Officer Michael Fanone, a 20-year police veteran with four daughters, was part of a line of officers protecting the Capitol. He was one of three officers that the mob dragged down the stairs. When they dragged him, they stole his badge, his radio, his ammunition magazine, and they tased him, triggering a heart attack. Here he describes his experience.
It looked like a medieval battle scene. You know, it was some of the most brutal combat, you know, I've ever encountered. At one point, I got tased. People were yelling out, you know, we got one, we got one.
Officer Christina Lowry, who regularly serves in MPD's Narcotics and Specialized Investigation Division, also protected the front Capitol entrance. Here's her experience.
I mean, I can't say enough about the officers that were there, the officers that were on the front line. And when I say the front line, I mean literally officers that were in a line, stopping these people that were beating them with metal poles. They were spraying them with bear mace. I mean, they did everything in their power to not let those people in. And this was going on for hours.
Around 4:30 p.m., hours into the Capitol riots, Officer Daniel Hodges was protecting a West Side Capitol entrance when rioters who were trying to stop the certification trapped him between two doors. When Officer Hodges was interviewed later, this is how he described what was happening.
They threw down a huge metal object that hit me in the head. I was also knocked down. The medical mask I was wearing at the time got pulled up over my eyes, so I was on the ground and blinded, and they started just attacking me from all sides.
Rioters crushed Officer Hodges. He was wedged in the doorway, blood dripping from his mouth. He was struggling to breathe, all while the insurrectionists hit him. Officer Hodges' experience reminds you of what he and many other officers experienced that day, what they went through. We're also reminded of the three officers who lost their lives. Capitol Hill police officers Sicknick, Liebengood, and Metropolitan Police Officer Smith. And many law enforcement families, we pray for our loved ones, and we know the scripture of Matthew, chapter 5, verse 9. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. I'm sorry I have to show you the next video, but in it you will see how blessed we were that on that hellish day, we had a peacemaker like Officer Hodges, protecting our lives, our staff's lives, this Capitol, and the certification process. May we do all we can in this chamber to make sure that never happens again.
trying to force a door. One of these maggot scum laid his hands. On the officer's gas mask. That's the officer you hear screaming, holding them back. And Eric Swalwell has left the podium. You gotta wonder, why didn't...
Mr. President, we'll now have a recess for dinner and we'll resume at 6:15.
The Senate will stand in recess.
Gotta wonder why that officer, as bravely as he was performing, why didn't he or one of his sibling officers shoot a few of them? I hate violence. I despise it. But if ever there was a case of self-defense, that's it. And I'm sorry to bring it up, but it's the reality. If those had been persons of color trying to force that door, bullets would have flown and bodies would have fallen. You know it's true. I know it's true. God. God. It's been a hell of a day. This has been the competence of this team. These people, these have been, the last impeachment trial managers were fantastic. This group has taken it to a higher level. And just as a backgrounder, when you see all that video, all that audio, the work going on in the background to make all of this flow seamlessly is amazing to contemplate. I don't edit video because I hate editing video. I mean, there are some people who actually don't mind it, like it, whatever. But the thing about editing video is it takes a long time. And so the effort going into this is profound. I'm impressed as I can be. Oh my God, Stacey Plaskett. She was absolutely masterful in the indictment and condemnation that she achieved through her segment. I figure we'll get the conversation going a little earlier this evening. Because, frankly, it's a lot easier to watch this stuff if you've got some company. And you can make more sense out of it. They are replaying Stacey Plaskett now. Video rolling.
On the left-hand side of the video, just inside the hallway, is the door to the Senate chamber. And watch how Officer Goodman provokes the riders and purposefully draws them away from the door to the Senate chamber and towards the other officers waiting down the hall. The rider seen carrying a baseball bat in this video is the same one we saw moments ago breaching the window on the first floor. While all of this was going on, Vice President Pence was still in the room near the Senate chamber. It was not until 2:26 that he was evacuated to a secure location. This next security video shows that evacuation. His movements are depicted by the orange dot in our model. The red and blue dots represents the location where the mob and Officer Goodman were, and where Officer Goodman led the mob away from the chamber just moments ago. You can see Vice President Pence and his family quickly move down the stairs. The Vice President turns around briefly as he's headed down. As Pence was being evacuated, rioters started to spread throughout the Capitol. Those inside helped other rioters break in through doors in several locations around this entire building. And the mob was looking for Vice President Pence because of his patriotism, because the Vice President had refused to do what the President demanded and overturn the election results. During the assault on the Capitol, extremists reportedly coordinated online and discussed how they could hunt down the Vice President. Journalists in the Capitol reported they heard rioters say they were looking for Pence in order to execute him. Trump supporters had erected a gallows on the lawn in front of the Capitol building. Another group of rioters chanted, "Hang Mike Pence," as they stood in the open door of the Capitol building. You can hear the security alarm from the door in the background, and you can hear the mob calling for the death of the Vice President of the United States. This wasn't an isolated area or incident where that was being told, where that was being said. It was going on everywhere. Here's another example of the crowd outside yelling, "Bring out Pence! Bring him out!
Bring him out!
Bring him out!
Bring out Pence!
After President Trump had primed his followers for months and inflamed the rally goers that morning, it is no wonder that the Vice President of the United States was the target of their wrath after Pence refused to overturn the election results. Listen to this man explain.
Well, Congress, cowards, hid in their inside and were emergency escorted away because of fear of the people. Of course, they're cowards, can't face the people, can't do the right thing. Pence lied to us. He's a total treasonous pig, and his name will be mud forever. Now the real battle begins, and it looks like the American people are very pissed. So good luck with that. Peace out.
Peace out. Several insurrectionists described what they had planned to do if they encountered the Vice President or other lawmakers. One of them, Dominic Pizzola, also known as Spaz, is a member of the Proud Boys, as we discuss. Pizzola came to the Capitol on January 6 with deadly intentions. He commandeered a Capitol police shield, used it to smash a glass window, entered the Capitol, and paved the way for dozens of insurrectionists. As you recall from an earlier video, Pizzola was one of the first wave of rioters to breach the building. On the left, you can see a screenshot from the video of the break-in we showed earlier. And on the right, you can see Pizzola in the mob chase Capitol Police officer Eugene Goodman through the building. Pizzola is the man in the center of the photo with the gray beard. Pizzola has since been charged with 8 federal crimes for his conduct related to January 6. According to an FBI agent's affidavit submitted to the court, the group that was with him during the sack of the Capitol confirmed that they were out to murder, quote, anyone they got their hands on. Here's what the FBI said, and I quote, other members of the group talked about things they had done that day, and they said that anyone they got their hands on, they would have killed, including Nancy Pelosi, and that, quote, they would have killed Vice President Mike Pence if given the chance. They were talking about assassinating the Vice President of the United States. During the course of the attack, the Vice President never left the Capitol, remained locked down with his family inside the building. Remember that as you think about these images and the sounds of the attack. The Vice President, our second in command, was always at the center of it. Vice President Pence was threatened with death by the president's supporters because he rejected President Trump's demand that he overturn the election.
Plaskett on the Senate floor earlier today. Now,
and so it is that that was earlier today. Now it looks like Lisa Murkowski is talking.
Scenario that has been laid out before us. I don't see how Donald Trump could be reelected to the presidency again.
You're under no pressure, or are you, from your leadership to vote a certain way?
No, none whatsoever. None whatsoever. Okay. Absolutely not.
You feel free to vote your conscience.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you, Senator. Thanks, appreciate your time.
Well, let's see if any more Republicans wander up.
Alaska Republican Lisa Murkowski.
We'll see if somebody does. I'll interrupt. Steve in New York says the term chilling just doesn't say it. No, this whole thing beggars language entirely. Lee in New York pointing out, of course, Josh Hawley has his feet up. He's seen this movie and knows how it ends. He knows how he's going to make it end. Well, let's run over and check in with Sparky and see what's going on. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob. I'm out here in the man cave. Boy, this is riveting,
isn't it? Yesterday was. It's really interesting. I saw a news story saying that Bruce Castor, who everybody's just completely obliterated yesterday for his howlingly bad performance. He said, and it reminded me, you may have even seen it somewhere down the road. There's an old George Carlin bit where George Carlin says, man, have you ever seen a cat like walking along and he'll just fall over, tumble, you know, fall off of something. And then he gets up. Cats are so cool. They're like, I meant to do that. So I didn't mean that to sound so Trumpy, but the fact of the matter is, that was Bruce Castor's defense today. He said, no, I meant to do that because I was trying to make sure that everybody focused on my message and not the House manager's. Yeah, sure, Jan, right?
How does the defense team handle this prosecution team? I mean,
well,
these are the all stars.
Yeah, they are, and I mean, they're bringing their A game. But how do they handle it? Well, I think Josh Hawley already gave us a hint because he said, "Well, the managers are presenting their case clearly and concisely, but it doesn't matter because we don't have jurisdiction." That's what they're going to claim: no jurisdiction. The Senate has no right to be hearing any of this, and that's what they're going to argue. That's what his lawyers, even though they've already had a motion that says it's constitutional to do this, in other words, that the Senate does have jurisdiction, that silly little prick Josh Hawley is, nuh-uh, don't neither, la-la-la-la-la, can't hear you. What a little punk.
Well, the American people need to hear it.
And I hope the American people are, Sparky.
I know my one sister in Tennessee is probably listening to it.
Do you think the maggots are at all?
No, my other sister's a maggot. She lives in Arizona. I don't know if she's listening to it.
To the maggots, this is a fucking highlight reel. You know? I'm sorry. You know, it wasn't really until I don't think we've ever heard the police traffic, the radio traffic, and I know we haven't seen the closed circuit security footage.
No, we haven't,
but
Scott.
As they were laying it out, it literally, the only thing that kept it from being an uncontrolled bloodbath were a matter of time, that is to say minutes, literal minutes, and space, literal feet. I just somehow never had that sense of it with all of the coverage since this happened. But today, just now, in the last
Swalwell hour, walked it off.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He said, I paced it off. Jesus. And the defense, and I have that in air quotes for those of you only listening and not watching, if there's any defense to be tried by these fools, the Republicans and these two, you know, dime store lawyers, what they will try to sell to the public is either Trump's words had no effect on the mob, or they'll try, as you said, with there's no jurisdiction. They'll use that quote defense. The bile is rising in my throat when I think of
but they shut that down early about what Trump supporters said and everything.
Yeah, I know. That's us. We can discern reality based reality. These other people are either in total denial, or they're too stupid to follow the story. It's got to be willful denial. There's no other conclusion to draw if you see it laid out. And they are painstaking in their
absolutely. You know, it has been like a masterclass. It really has.
Yes. That with video, with charts, with color-coded indicators on the map of the fucking Capitol saying this is where the vice president was, this is where the police were, this is where the mob was. I mean, goddamn.
So here's a question. Do you think the maggot senators who were at Hazard that day, too, are they just sitting there saying, well, they wouldn't have hurt me? I mean, if they wanted to slaughter some of the Democrats, that's just fine, but they wouldn't have hurt me. You know, have these stupid fucks never read about Robespierre what was his name, Jean-Paul Marat?
Well, here's a big clue, a big hint. If they were looking for Pence and had gone to the trouble of erecting a gallows and tied a rope to it, if they were looking for Pence, they were looking for you, Republican senators and House members. These people were not driven by reason or justification or common sense or anything. That one dude referred to Pence as a vile pig or something like that.
Yeah.
That is in a nutshell the case of the case. These people were there for a reason, an unreasoned reason.
I got a question. Could we get as serious about the fucking Proud Boys and the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters boys? Can we get as serious about them as, say, we used to, that we the absolute purple polka-dotted blue scream and hissy and kittens with crocheted tails that white America had about the Black Panther Party for self-defense. You think we could do that?
I would hope that we could at long last.
Is that rhetorical? Bob, is that Robin, is that rhetorical?
I fear that it is, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. And I'm going to say something for Scott, about something Scott said.
Are you in a hallway?
Say, yes. I'm walking out. I always say, dear, dear Scott, you have such a high view of humanity. Very admirable. But the one option that you left out of why these people were doing it, it's because they like it. They agree with it.
They've been itching to do this for. Their grandpappies and their great grandpappies and their great great grandpappies all the way back to the Civil War.
I'm going to put it this way, and then I'm going to be getting on the subway soon, so I just have to listen. Put it this way. It's kind of a crude way of looking at it. Obama was the clearasil on the zit. Trump popped it. Does the analogy make sense?
Yeah, it does. And let all the infection and civic pus fly. And if zit didn't if zit didn't take care of dinner in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, I just did.
Okay. Well, I could have said hemorrhoid or boil. I just remember during Obama's term, all of the, you know, when I would go back to Ohio and some of the small towns that my family's from, all of the, we're going to take back America. That's where it started to bubble up.
From who?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think, and that was rhetorical too, Sparky. I think we know the answer.
And then Trump came along and said, hey, all that shit, that all that pent-up hatred and anger that rose to the surface because one of those was in our White House. Now I'm going to give you permission to act on that. That's all this is. And we really need to get it out. We need to get it out of our head. And it's hard to do because we don't want to think that people are like this. But this has nothing to do with being irrational. It has nothing to do with being crazy. It has everything to do with, this is what we want. Think of those people calling them people patriots and referencing 1776. That's who they think they are. These fuckers think they're the Minutemen.
And you've got some agreement over on Twitter. Tamara said, Steve's right. They were enjoying themselves. They were really enjoying themselves, calling out for Crazy Nancy. Warriors, come out to play.
I mean, good God, Robin. They were, hey, I'm real estate such and such. Hey, give me a call when you're in town.
If I can, if I can attack the Capitol, I can damn sure get you a deal on a new house.
Yes.
Yeah, it's I know I say breathtaking, I say, but words fail, Steve. I mean, I've seen a lot of the video footage from this. There's stuff I saw today I'd never seen before. And for somebody like you, somebody like me who's had some time in these buildings, it's not hard to put yourself in that spot, is it?
No, it's not. And remember, I worked there.
I know. I just wander around working on a bill. You were there every day, day in and day out.
Mm-hmm. I've been surprised how personally I've taken this.
And of course, Arnold just said, it's a wonderful show. It's a very nice narrative of our history, but Trump gets acquitted. And that's, and you know, we had this conversation almost exactly a year ago. How the hell does that happen? How do you sit and watch this evidence I mean, I know it was a piece of fiction, but damn, this is the trial of Tom Robinson from To Kill a Mockingbird. They all saw that Tom Robinson couldn't possibly have choked her with that hand because the hand was withered. But the all-white jury sat there and heard the evidence, knew he wasn't guilty, and convicted him anyway. Isn't that this?
Maybe that's how Trump
got these, can you hear me?
These lawyers paid them each with a bag of nuts.
Yeah, I hear you, Megan.
I got something to say about that, what you just mentioned, and I think I understand the Democrats' strategy now. Sorry, bear with me. I'm trying to drive through this shitty storm to drive to Delaware for the weekend. I was originally just going to listen to the call, but the Democrats are doing this not necessarily to get a conviction, although they hope for that. I think now it's getting it on the public record, getting the American people the facts of what really went down, and it is going to make the Republicans who vote to acquit him anyway look even worse than they already are, because I don't think the Republicans really are fathoming just how bad this looks on them.
You know, Megan, I can see that being a viable strategy. I would ask, however, if in fact it is, how they expect that to affect a Senate race in, you know, Tennessee or Arkansas or Kentucky Stan.
They may not, Robin. They may not. They may, look, that we've already, Florida might be next. And either way, they could be looking at the big overall picture. They may keep a few states, but honestly, the two elections are going to be interesting to watch, just with the House race.
We got
a lot of Senate seats.
Well, I mean, just to go over that for a second, Republicans are retiring in Ohio, Alabama, North Carolina, and PA. We already know, and I found the news rather exciting, John Fetterman, Lieutenant Governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, is going to run for Pat Toomey's seat. Unless Arnold or somebody else in Pennsylvania tells me otherwise, I would think that he has a damn good chance.
That guy's a straight badass.
Yes, he is.
I mean, he is a badass.
Okay.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I said just also consider, we don't know what criminal charges could be coming down the pike for Trump family at all after this.
Well, I guess there was too much speculative to say, and I really, really do appreciate the way the team has chosen their words, but everything that was behind this, you know, early in the day they talked about how he was talking, it'll be a stolen election 6 months before the election.
Yep.
And the reason for this is he was desperate to stay in office to avoid liability, criminal and civil. And that's one of the things that just so thoroughly pisses me off about the Southern District of New York punting on the individual one cases. But just to go back, you know, the Republicans have to defend in Florida. They have to defend in South Carolina. That's Tim Scott. Randy Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, is up in Kentucky. I would love to see, what was it? Was it Charles Booker? I hope what's her name doesn't, Amy McGrath. I hope she doesn't run against Randy Paul too. I hope the Democratic nominee in Kentucky is Charles Booker, if I'm getting the name right. But, you know, there's nothing to worry about in Indiana. I think Ron Johnson may have something to worry about. No, maybe that's not Ron Johnson. But Wisconsin's, no, that's a Republican senator. So that's Ron Johnson is up in Wisconsin. And he's a fucking moron. But they have elected him before. the other Republican, you know, Grassley is up, I guess, in Iowa. Blunt's up in Missouri. Somebody's up in Arkansas. I'm thinking Tom Cotton. Louisiana has an open seat. Oklahoma, or not an open seat, but a seat to defend. Oklahoma has a Republican seat to defend. So does Kansas. And so do both North and South Dakota, Utah, and Idaho, and Alaska. And I think Hawaii. So the question becomes, how do you make that work in states that are usually deemed to be blood solid red?
Well, we flipped Alabama and we flipped Georgia already.
We did not flip
and
Alabama.
Like I said,
we did not flip Alabama.
We did briefly. We did briefly, and that was only because Roy Moore was so terrible.
Right.
But I this is not going to be a good look for Republicans. I don't know how many seats they retain, but I'm sorry, but I don't think that this is going to play out the way that they think it's going to play out.
Well, it is. It'll be fascinating to see. Let's see. Maryland, on the Democratic side, it's Maryland, New York, Connecticut, New Hampshire, Vermont, Illinois, Reverend Warnock in Georgia, Colorado, New Mexico, Nevada, California, Oregon, Washington, and Hawaii.
Well, you also have to factor in if the Republicans keep on blocking COVID relief. Because the one thing that even the maggots don't like is fiddling with their money. And there's a lot of people hurting out there right now. Now, the die-hard maggots, no, they're not going to change.
Oh, was somebody going to say something?
Oh.
No, I thought somebody was trying to jump in.
Oh, okay. No. I think this is just going to make them look horrible.
Hey, Robin?
Yes, Steve.
Can you hear me okay?
I gotcha.
I wish I could agree with Megan, but I don't. But here's something else we also have to consider. These maggots in the Senate, even if they wanted to vote to convict, they're scared of these people because they have guns, and all they had to do and see who Donald Trump told them to turn on, Mike Pence, and they were calling for his execution. I think that's also part of the calculation.
They're afraid. Now they're afraid, but now they're caught in a rock and a hard place now. This is Scylla and Charybdis stuff, because the people that aren't maggots, that don't have guns, are going to be disgusted that they showed no spine. And now that this case has been laid out very clearly, this is what I meant when I said it makes them look terrible.
But if it doesn't matter, and I'm not trying to be disagreeable, Megan. It doesn't matter if it looks terrible to some civilized person in a civilized state. It has to look terrible to somebody in Louisiana. It has to look terrible to people in Arkansas, Oklahoma, Stan. Etc. And I there are good people in every state, but there's a lot of these states where the good people are outnumbered by a wide margin too.
I'm not so sure after the last two election cycles that there is such a thing as such a firm blue state or red state anymore. And I know I sound like a Pollyanna saying that, but we have a Republican governor in Massachusetts right now, which has always been considered blue. We flipped Georgia. That's because things were so terrible. But again, I think it's coming down to the wire where you're seeing the demographics much more clearly now in these election cycles.
Well, I'm curious to see how many more Republicans, registered Republicans, change their registration.
Yeah, that's another thing. That a lot of them were fleeing the party, last I heard.
Thousands.
And, you know, we mentioned Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. He works in a lumber mill there a few minutes ago. Ralphs sent me a CNN story about the conspiracy theory that Ron Johnson is now floating. Now, recall that we had Marjorie Taylor Greene Cueball saying that it wasn't really Trump supporters who did this. We got the Senate Majority Leader from the state of Michigan saying it wasn't really Trump supporters who did this. And last night I said, you know, this is proof that this is an engineered idea. And so you got Ron Johnson saying that it was secretly orchestrated by Nancy Pelosi. He fucking said that.
Yes, I saw that interview.
I mean, did that not just make you want to eat dirt and run rabbits?
Yeah.
He says I'm surprised at this point I'm not out in the car parking lot just flipping cars. I mean, this is ridiculous. Enough's enough.
You would hope.
For Bebop, it is enough. Now they're just taking it too fucking far. I have to listen to, pardon my French, but I had to listen to audio. I didn't even see the video because I've been on the road today. Had to listen to audio about people calling out for Nancy Pelosi, and I don't even want to think about what would have happened if they actually gotten their hands on her. And right. That's on top of AOC's account of how scared she was. And then I had to hear Ayanna Pressley going on about how someone ripped the damn panic button out of her office while she was trying to hide.
Absolutely. Horrifying. Simply horrifying.
Well, what's horrifying is what's going to happen when people have their limits. People have their limits. What's going to happen when people start fighting back? And it ain't going to be polite protests anymore.
What were you saying, Sparky?
I said they played a cell phone call from a staff member of Pelosi hiding underneath a desk, whispering into the cell phone, calling somebody for help.
Oh, yeah.
While the rioters were beating on their door.
Well, the thing that's
powerful.
It was. And the thing that troubles me, and I almost don't want to even think about it, but if Trump sent his mob of insurrectionists to stop the count of the electoral vote, the certification of the electoral vote on January 6th, what is going to be the response if by some miracle he's convicted? And I don't, no matter how I turn it in my mind, I don't see any pretty pictures at all. It could be the start.
Well, again, to reiterate, Scott, you're going to what, you know, you're sort of alluding, whether intentionally or not, to what is already known, and that is that there is another attack expected, or at least potentially expected, on March the 4th.
Well, no, the 4th. I don't know the significance of March 4th.
Oh, wow, this is so nutty.
I'm sorry, I haven't been listening, Scott.
That must have been one of those days you slept in.
I must have been.
Like the Oath Keepers and the 3%ers and whatever are now mingling and joining forces with the sovereign citizen dangerous Lulus.
Okay.
And they they have these wacky, I mean, wacky ideas. They're obsessed with fringes on flat gold fringe on American flags and eagles at the top, because that means it's not a real American flag. That's the flag of the American corporation, because back in the 1870s, they turned America into a corporation. And it was no longer the republic that the founders gave us. And so the and back before the inauguration of FDR, we held our inaugurations on March 4th. Lincoln was inaugurated on March 4th. So
I did know that.
So what they've concocted is this cockamamie idea that on March the 4th, Trump will return as president and be inaugurated, and we will have our republic back, and we will break the corporation that the Supreme Court turned America into.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Because March 4th is the traditional. The
there ain't enough acid.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I knew it wasn't Hitler's birthday, because that's not till April. Okay, but I just...
I love the way, because that's not till April. Yeah, like you got it on the calendar.
Well, I've got it circled, you know. Because I celebrate that in a very special way. I have a photo stat of Hitler, and I piss on it every April, 17th, 18th, whatever it is. So, or 20th.
But they're they are far gone.
You don't celebrate 420, Scott?
Whenever I can, Sparky. Okay. But I have to pace myself. And those brownies, they don't bake themselves. Before they bake.
No, but you can get baked yourself.
Yeah, I know, and I have. It'll all be in my book. But getting back to that fool that was interviewed, that slightly bearded fellow, numbskull, he said, "We're here because they've got to hear from the people." Well, that was on January 6th. I don't know where he was on Election Day, but I'm pretty sure that the people left a clear message back in November.
After the tone.
Yeah. At the tone, please leave your message and speak clearly and distinctly. But they're mindless fools. They're just mindless fools. And I'm not and that thing about the fringed flags where you could... I read up on that some years ago. How crazy do you have to be to live in that world? I mean, what color is the sun on that planet where these morons dwell?
Sky blue pink.
Morons for Moronica. Hooray. Jesus.
And we just got some breaking news. Has nothing to do really with the impeachment trial. But at 78 years of age, Larry Flint has passed away.
Oh, man. Damn. I mean, he was kind of disgusting, but, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Jesus. He came to Cincinnati once to give a speech, and I went, and there was a Q&A afterwards. And at one point, he owned the Los Angeles Free Press, which used to be kind of an underground newspaper. And there for a while, he was offering $1 million to anyone who could bring concrete evidence regarding the Kennedy assassination. And I asked him, I said, what's the state of $1 million? Did you award any of it? And he wouldn't answer me. That's too bad. Mary Wilson, one of the original Supremes, died the other day. Where the fuckers from my youth and formative years are dropping like flies. And I know age happens, but it's very sad.
Well, it's been one goddamn tragedy after another, you know, to the tune of 500,000 Americans.
Well, that too. The whirling odometer of death continues to spin. Although, in some places, the rapidity of the infection rate is lowering somewhat, and the vaccinations are ramping up slowly but surely. I mean.
Yeah, but there's the potential in there for it to be a booby trap. I was reading about that the other day.
What, with these variants?
Well, the variants, and you know, every time we think maybe we're getting close to turning a corner, we have another fucking national holiday. And it wasn't a declared holiday or anything, but like I said yesterday, give it 2 weeks and we'll have another cluster. Another spike out of Super Bowl Sunday.
Down in Tampa. Oh, yeah. I don't doubt that a bit.
And that wasn't, it wasn't just Tampa, Scott. There were the usual Super Bowl parties all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a post that our pal Dan Fisher put up and said, you know, if you've got great pictures of your Super Bowl party that you had with a bunch of people you don't live with, save me the time of hating your fucking guts. And don't put it on social media.
Yeah. People are just so willful. They're like children. Actually, children, by and large, are more well-behaved by a certain point. You may have to send them to the corner a couple of times to stand in the corner, not go around the corner. But generally speaking, a 3 or 4-year-old will get the point. After a while, and it's usually a pretty quick while. But these fuckers, they don't give a shit. They're using the 2-year-old defense. I don't want to, and you can't make me. Well, when you're dead, that's pretty much nature's way of putting its foot down, wouldn't you say?
I would tend to agree, yes.
But they don't give a fuck. No.
And by the way, Jeremy in Vermont points out, as bad as Larry Flint may have been artistically, he took fucking Newt Gingrich down and down fucking hard, literally. True.
Yeah, and he won in the Supreme Court against Jerry Falwell, too, with that Campari ad. Do you remember that?
Oh, you never forget, yeah. With his mom in the outhouse.
Yes, indeed. My First Time by Jerry Falwell. that fucker.
A couple of interesting COVID numbers that have come up. One of them is in the L.A. Basin. They now have an L.A. variant. And there was another article I came across of a guy who was immunocompromised, I think in Boston, who they kept trying to cure, but he had COVID for something like 154 days straight. And every time they kind of get him cured up, he'd be home for a little bit and then come back, and he was still sick. And they started investigating his COVID cells, and in his immune-compromised body, it was making new variations before the British or South African or any of the rest of it. So it appears that by aggressively treating people that are immunocompromised, they are generating and creating variants of the COVID-19 SARS. Just for information.
Yeah, Shorty in L.A. Hit me to the L.A. variant on the program yesterday. It is an aggressive and opportunistic little bug, this COVID-19, because coronaviruses usually are. Remember, the common cold is a coronavirus. That's why we don't have a cure for it.
Mutates so fast that we don't have a vaccine for it either.
No. Oh, by the way, did you go out for your drive?
Yeah, I went for a little bit of it. I went to the organizational meetup at the parking lot at the Target, and I took a picture. I posted it in the Skype chat and the other chat. But then I came home to entertain myself with what's going on in D.C. So no big run today. But they were only going to redo the same run we did last Sunday. So I'd seen that road and decided to just come home and sit at the kitchen table and watch MSNBC.
Well, did you hear about Jessica's TR7 at the beginning of the program?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, she's rehabbing she's been in the process of rehabbing a TR7 for 6 years.
Yeah, well, that's too modern for me. I'm too old for one of those. I got to stay with the earlier models.
Oh, it's a cutie.
And the hard top that's on it is removable. So in the summer, it's open. And I've got a soft top for it, too. But this time of year, if the wife wants to go out with me, she insists I put the hard top on.
Too cold.
So the heat will keep. Yeah, it's too. I mean, you know, the temperature's below 50. So, and yeah, I could put on a knit cap and wear gloves and the rest of that crap. But I'd rather roll up the windows and turn the heat on.
No, here. Yeah, that just makes sense. Well, I thought of you today, you know, hopefully out there enjoying the road, but, you know, it was nice. It must have been. How often do you get it out?
Well, before COVID, we used to go out 2-3 times a month, once a month on a really long run, like, you know, 100 miles or so. And then we do short little things. And then, of course, there's all the car shows within a 50-mile radius and things of that sort. And then we have our monthly meeting, and I drive it to the monthly meeting, unless it's raining. I don't take it out in the rain just because I don't want to get rust on it. But with this COVID, we're just – God, we can't go have a picnic in the park because the parks, all the bathrooms are closed up, and we can't go to a restaurant because the restaurants are all closed. So when I went to take it out last Sunday, I had to get to working on it by Monday, found out the battery was 100% dead.
Oh, that's lovely.
So
does the old adage about English automobiles obtain, namely that if there's no oil on the floor, there's no oil in the car?
Sort of, yeah. It's the old one about the guy gets married. He's got a British sports car, and he's tinkering on it every weekend, which is something you basically have to do. And she came out and said, dear, I'd really like to help you with the car, you know. What can I do? And he goes, well, what can you do? And he goes, well, I kind of helped my dad a couple of times to change the oil. How do you change the oil on this? He says, British cars are easy. You just pull it out of the garage, and you pick up that oil pan you had sitting underneath it, and you just pour it back in the top.
I'm sorry, that just something vaguely humorous about that.
Well, but, you know, there's another one. You know why no British car company ever had a – well, okay. Do you know why Smith's Electric – which is the gauges in all these little British cars, never ran a night shift?
No.
Because they were afraid to drive at night.
Ooh, damn.
Now, you know why they put rear window defrosters on an MG, don't you?
No.
Keep your hands warm when you push it.
Okay, that's quality. That's quality. So they were supposed to be back from supper at 6:15. It is now 20 past the hour, and
MSNBC says soon trial to resume.
Yeah, in recess, subject to the call of the chair at C-SPAN.
Yeah, but it was for dinner, so there was a lot of people helter-skelter.
Well, and it takes a little while to get out of there and get all the way, because the, you know, that's taking place in the Capitol. You got to get all the way over to Dirksen for the Senate dining room, I think.
Well, Nancy just had to go to her office and eat some ice cream.
Well, Nancy's, you
know, Nancy's not involved in this.
Well, I realize that. Reason. That was just a comment about that freezer of ice cream that she had in her office that the right wingers were getting all uptight about.
Fuck them.
That was just a snark.
Have you ever had the Senate Navy bean soup, Robin?
Yes, I have.
What do you think of it?
It ain't bad. I mean, I'm not a Navy. You know, it's basically a white ham and bean soup. Naturally, yeah. It's a white bean.
They use Strom Thurmond's home recipe.
There we go. That. Wait a minute. Yeah, you earned that one.
Man, Navy bean soup. I think you can buy it in cans for those who haven't tried it. I don't know where they sell it, but if you put like Senate bean soup or something, Google that, you should be able to find it. It's been a while since I've had it, but yeah, but what I was saying is they can't eat that fast because that's served piping hot, as it should be.
You ever had cold bean soup?
I'm not real big on cold beans unless it's like a three-bean salad. I do like that.
Precisely my point. And I think they serve it with cornbread, don't they?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe so. Another thing I lost it. Just in terms of having something in your mind and less than a 15 seconds later it's gone, or is that just me?
It's been happening to me for about 17 years.
It's called CRS, Scott.
I'm very fuzzy, foggy, or whatever. Well, CRS, what is that?
Can't remember shit.
Oh.
There's another one. Well,
there you go. There you go. CRS. I got to remember that. Well, fuck me. I'm not going to be able to remember it because what is that? I keep seeing this commercial for this stuff, this supplement that's supposed to
Prevagen?
Improve your... Yeah, but I get to the store, and I forget what to ask.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, I always go, and I forget what I was after. And, well, okay, so it's made from jellyfish? Is there any data out there to suggest that jellyfish have fantastic fucking memories? I mean, all they do is bob. Hey, I remember that wave.
My wife just bobbed. Bought some. I have to look at the bottle. She kept seeing the ad, and she thought, well, I'll give it a try. She got it off Amazon.
There must be an enzyme or a component in jellyfish. See, I don't even know how the scientists would come up with the idea. Well, let's see, Fred, what are we going to do today? Well, we've tried... we've tried bee pollen. We've tried this. We've tried that. I know. Let's formulate one with jellyfish innards in it and see if that improves Aunt Mabel's memory.
It's a jellyfish. How can you tell which is the innards?
Well, there's that. There's that.
And Randy in PA says, someone in a TR7 once rear-ended me and gave my car a wedgie. It took out my muffler system. Because it's a wedge. Yeah, I got it, yeah. Shape of things to him.
You're talking about British cars. Did you ever watch the entirety of Mad Men?
No.
Because the Jaguar figures prominently when they get the Jaguar account.
I mean, it was brilliantly acted and everything, but I'd watch it and the misogyny, just the overt late 50s, early 60s misogyny was just breathtaking.
Yeah, I know.
Can't.
I know.
Oh, and thanks.
And the drinking at work, could you function drinking that goddamn much and the smoking and fucking Lucky Strikes?
No. No. Absolutely couldn't. Roger posted the Senate Navy bean soup recipe, and I'm looking at it now. Pound of Navy beans, pound of ham with the bone in, potatoes, salt, milk, unsalted butter, onion, celery, garlic, fresh parsley, and ground. It basically sounds like it's like a potato soup recipe with white beans added. Randy Radar reminds us, kidney beans are great, but you got to have the dark kidney beans, and they say you shouldn't cook the beans in salty water, but to get them to taste good, you have to. That's the trick, and Roger maybe will want to jump in on this, but you got to soak them, and you don't cook them in salt water, because if you do, they explode, and then you've just got a bean soup mash. You got to salt. What you do is you salt them. You know, you salt them once they're cooked, and that way they're less prone to popping.
Do you like pasta salad?
Some, not all.
There's a place, I don't know if it's still there, but when I lived in Kansas City, it was there in the Westport neighborhood, Mario's, Marios. If you put Mario's Westport, Kansas City pasta salad in your Google machine, you can get the recipe. It is the best pasta salad I've ever had. People come from miles around for that stuff. And if I ever make it to Kansas City and they're still there, that's the first place I'm headed. And then that night I'm going to Arthur Bryant's for barbecue.
Well, what was that the same place in Westport that had the bread baked in the clay flower pots? Because the whole neighborhood just smelled of fresh baking bread. It was heavenly.
Well, there was a bread factory in that neighborhood.
No. This was a restaurant, and their thing there was that, you know, they would bring you a loaf of bread to the table that had been baked in one of the small clay pots.
No, I bet you that was the Corner restaurant.
No, I'd recognize the name. Let's ask Dr. Google. Damn it.
Was it a chicken joint? Was it Stroud's chicken joint? It rings a faint bell, but I swear I'd... I think I've been to that place. They're like little loaves of bread.
Stanford and Sons.
Oh, Stanford. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And I think they're long gone now, which is a shame.
Yeah. And they used to have a little comedy club upstairs from there.
Apparently the... Yeah, it's gone.
Oh, that's too bad. I hope Stroud's is still there. For pan-fried chicken?
All right, we're back. Let's check in with Representative Raskin.
The insurrection and refuse to speak out against the violence or do anything to stop it. Mr. Cicilline.
Mr. President, distinguished senators, you just heard from my colleagues about the harrowing events that happened here
David
at the
Cicilline.
Capitol on January 6th and saw that very disturbing video. I'd now like to turn your attention to what was happening on the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue at the White House. And the truth is, the facts are, that on January 6th, Donald Trump did not once condemn this attack. He did not once condemn the attackers. In fact, on January 6th, the only person he condemned was his own vice president, Mike Pence, who was hiding in this building with his family in fear for his life. In the first crucial hours of this violent attack, he did nothing to stop it, nothing to help us. By all accounts from the people that were around him, he was delighted. And here's the last thing Donald Trump said that day. And you might remember this from my motions presentation earlier in the week. At 6 p.m. on January 6th, after all the destruction that you just saw, the Capitol Police and the National Guard fighting to secure this building, here's what Donald Trump tweeted. These are the things and events that happen when a sacred landslide election victory is so unceremoniously and viciously stripped away from great patriots who have been badly and unfairly treated for so long. Go home with love and in peace. Remember this day forever. He got what he incited, and according to Donald Trump, we got what we deserved. Donald Trump's incitement of this insurrection, including his dereliction of his duty as commander-in-chief to defend the Capitol and the people in it, his complete refusal to condemn the attack while it was going on, and his continued incitement of the violence during the attack require impeachment. Now let's turn to then-President Trump's conduct that day. I want to start at the beginning when he addressed his thousands of great patriots, as he called them that morning. Around noon, Donald Trump began speaking at his rally just down Pennsylvania Avenue. Even before Donald Trump finished speaking, his supporters began to walk down toward the Capitol, and they were already starting to chant, "Stop the steal, storm the Capitol, invade the Capitol, fight for Trump." And by 12:53 p.m., they had violently forced their way through the barricades here at the Capitol. Now, about 1 o'clock that day, with this chaos just starting, Speaker Pelosi, as the Constitution requires, formally commenced the process by which this chamber certifies the election results. Within 10 minutes, at 1:11 p.m., as if almost on cue, Donald Trump concluded his speech with his final reminder to the thousands gathered there that it was time to go to the Capitol. Let's watch.
And we're going to the Capitol, and we're going to try and give, but we're going to try and give our Republicans, the weak ones, because the strong ones don't need any of our help. We're going to try and give them the kind of pride and boldness that they need to take back our country. So let's walk down Pennsylvania Avenue. I want to thank you all. God bless you, and God bless America. Thank you all for being here. This is incredible. Thank you very much.
Now, you've seen what happened when these supporters, following his orders, arrived here at the Capitol. But I want to look at what happened next. Now, you'll recall during the speech, President Trump said, "We're going to the Capitol," sort of suggesting that he was going to go with this crowd. Of course, that was not true. But let's hear what he said.
"Now it is up to Congress to confront this egregious assault on our democracy. And after this, we're going to walk down, and I'll be there with you. We're going to walk down. We're going to walk down. Anyone you want, but I think right here, we're going to walk down to the Capitol."
This, of course, was not true. He did not go with him to the Capitol. He left and went back to the White House. And while he was en route to the White House, violence really began to grow here at the Capitol. And within minutes of Donald Trump's speech ending, there were significant reports of escalating violence that began to surface. Buildings around the Capitol were starting to be evacuated. And by 1:15, an explosive device had been found at the DNC. A pipe bomb had been found at the RNC about 15 minutes earlier. The House Sergeant at Arms had called for immediate assistance. At 1:34 p.m., the mayor of Washington, D.C. called for additional National Guard troops. I won't go through all of the details of the violence that unfolded here. You just saw that. But as we walk through what our commander-in-chief did that day, I want to be very clear about exactly what was happening here at the same time. For 40 minutes, while buildings were being cleared, pipe bombs were being found, his supporters were literally breaching the perimeter of the Capitol and overwhelming law enforcement, and you saw the violence that was occurring. We heard nothing from the President of the United States. We didn't hear anything from Donald Trump until 1:49 p.m., when while all of this is unfolding, President Trump sent out a tweet. This was the first thing he did when he learned the United States Capitol, with all the members of Congress, his own vice president, was under violent attack. And what was that tweet? Nearly an hour after the rioters breached the Capitol perimeter at 1:49, Donald Trump released a propaganda reel of his Save America speech that he'd given an hour before. I want to be clear. The events I just described, the rioters are breaching the Capitol, attacking law enforcement. The violence is being broadcast all over the television for the whole world to see, including the President of the United States. And I want to show you, this is what is happening right before Donald Trump sends that video out again, and as he does it.
Our country has had enough. We will not take it anymore. And that's what this is all about. And to use a favorite term that all of you people really came up with, we will stop the steal. Because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength and you have to be strong.
Even if President Trump claims he didn't know the extent of the violence that would follow his speech, it was now happening in plain view, broadcast on television. His supporters were attacking law enforcement. The mayor and the police chief were calling for help. Members of Congress and the vice president were inside, scared for their lives. And he doesn't send help, doesn't try to stop it, doesn't even acknowledge the attack. Instead, our commander-in-chief tweeted the video of the speech that he'd given before that included language like, our country has had enough, we will not take it anymore, and that's what this is all about. You have to be strong. Those around Donald Trump, as was later reported, were disgusted. His close aides, his advisors, those working for him, former officials, even his family were begging him to do something. Kellyanne Conway, the president's close advisor, called to, quote, add her name to the chorus of aides urging Donald Trump to take action. Ivanka Trump, the president's own daughter, went to the Oval Office as soon as the rioting escalated and was, as confirmed by Senator Graham, quote, trying to get Trump to speak out, to tell everyone to leave, end quote. Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy called Jared Kushner, pleading with him to persuade Trump to issue a statement or to do something. And Kushner, too, went down to the White House after that call. And it wasn't just the people at the White House. Members of Congress from both parties who were trapped here were calling the White House to ask for help. Some members even appealed directly to Donald Trump. These members who had, quote, been loyal Trump supporters and were even willing to vote against the Electoral College results were now scared for their lives. Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy repeatedly even got into a screaming match as the attack was underway, demanding that Trump do something, issue a statement denouncing the mob. I imagine many of you sitting here today picked up your phone and tried to reach somebody at the White House to ask for help. This wasn't partisan politics. These were Americans from all sides trying to force our commander-in-chief to protect and defend our country. He was required to do that. Now, the extent of how many people tried to reach the president to get him to act is not known. But what is clear, what we know without any doubt, is that from the very beginning, the people around Donald Trump lobbied him to take command. What's also clear is what Donald Trump, our commander-in-chief, did in those initial hours to protect us. Nothing. Not a thing. He knew it was happening. The attack was on TV. We all know that President Trump had the power to stop these attacks. He was our commander-in-chief. He had the power to assess the security situation, send backup, send help. He also had incited this violent attack. They were listening to him. He could have commanded them to leave. But he didn't. The first critical hour and a half of this bloody attack, Donald Trump tweeted his rally speech and did nothing else. And we know why. We know his state of mind that prompted his utter, complete refusal to defend us. It was reported by those around him. The president, as reported by sources, at the time was delighted. As he watched the violence unfold on television, President Trump was reportedly, and I quote, borderline enthusiastic because it meant the certification was being derailed, end quote. Senator Ben Sasse related a conversation with senior White House officials that President Trump was, quote, walking around the White House, confused about why other people on his team weren't as excited as he was, end quote. Trump's reaction to this attack reportedly genuinely freaked people out. I understand why. We just suffered a very serious attack, an attack on our country. And we saw it, and the people around him knew it. But when Donald Trump saw it, he was delighted. Now, what President Trump did next confirms why he was so delighted, why he wanted this. Because it shows that his singular focus that day, the day we were attacked, was not protecting us, was not protecting you, was not protecting the Capitol. It was stopping the certification of the election results. The evidence is clear. Shortly after 2 p.m., as the siege was fully underway, then President Trump made a call. This is the first call that we are aware he made to anyone inside the Capitol during the attack. Didn't call the vice president to ask how he could help defend the Capitol. Didn't call the next two in line to the succession of the presidency to check on their safety or well-being. Instead, he attempted to call Senator Tuberville. He dialed Senator Lee by accident. Senator Lee describes it. He had just ended a prayer with his colleagues here in the Senate chamber. And the phone rang. It was Donald Trump. And how Senator Lee explains it is that the phone call goes something like this. Hey, Tommy, Trump asks, and Senator Lee says, this isn't Tommy, and he hands the phone to Senator Tuberville. Senator Lee then confirmed that he stood by as Senator Tuberville and President Trump spoke on the phone. And on that call, Donald Trump reportedly asked Senator Tuberville to make additional objections to the certification process. That's why he called. Now, let's be clear, at roughly 2 p.m., when Donald Trump was walking around the White House, watching the TV delighted, and spent 5 to 10 minutes talking to Senator Tuberville, urging him to delay the election results, this is what was happening in the Capitol.
protesters are in the building.
Thank you.
You saw Senator Lankford stop speaking and leave the floor quickly in that clip because the insurgents had broken through the barricades and had entered the building. And as these armed insurrectionists banged on the doors, members of Congress were told to put on their gas masks, to put bags over their heads for safety and prepare to evacuate. And Donald Trump was calling to ask a senator to delay the certification process. Let that sink in. Donald Trump didn't get to finish that call. It was cut off because the senators had to move to another location for your security. And thank God they did. Because as the call was occurring, the rioters got closer to the Senate chambers. And as we all know now, but for the heroism of Capitol Police Officer Eugene Goodman and other law enforcement officers who took them in a different direction to the police line, they very likely would have gotten here. Think about that. Armed insurrectionists, guns, weapons, zip ties, brass knuckles, they were coming for us. They were inside the United States Capitol trying to stop the certification process. The police were outnumbered. And but for the grace of God, they would have gotten us, all of us. And our commander-in-chief makes a call about an hour after the siege began, not to preserve, protect, and defend you and our country and the Capitol, but to join forces with the mob and pressure a senator to stop certification. We just can't get numb to this kind of behavior. There can be no doubt as to the purpose of Donald Trump's call. That he was not calling to assess the security threats or to check on the well-being of you or anyone else. Indeed, later on that evening, while all of the destruction and damage still continued, dozens of officers were being treated for serious injuries. Deaths were confirmed. About 7 p.m., the president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, made a call. And just in case you don't think there was some coordination, he also called Senator Lee's phone trying to reach Senator Tuberville. We don't have to guess as to what Rudy Giuliani said in that voicemail because we have it recorded. So let's listen to what the president's personal lawyer said on the night of this attack.
Senator Tuberville, or I should say Coach Tuberville, this is Rudy Giuliani, president's lawyer. I'm calling you because I want to discuss with you how they're trying to rush this hearing and how we need you, our Republican friends, to try to just slow it down.
Ooh, this is bad
this
for Tommy the Tuber.
This was the singular focus of Donald Trump during this bloody, violent attack on the Capitol, stopping the certification. Look, as I mentioned, I was a trial lawyer for 16 years. Sometimes you have to ask a jury to use reasonable inferences to piece together a defendant's state of mind. We don't have to do this here. While our country was violently attacked by an armed mob, President Trump not only refused to stop the attack or even address the attack at all, he made clear his focus was the same goal of the attackers he had incited, to stop the certification process and prevent the peaceful transition of power. The only action we know that he took an hour into this attack was to call Senator Tuberville to ask him to delay the certification. This is as clear evidence as I have ever seen of what Donald Trump really cared about that day. Now look, the certification process, as we all know, includes debate and objections. Some of us disagreed, but we came here on January 6th to formally administer the certification process pursuant to our constitutional duties. And at the end of it, Congress certified the results to ensure that we continue to be a country with leaders who are elected by the people for the people. Donald Trump's objection to the certification are not on trial. But what is on trial is while we were under armed attack and being evacuated, while our law enforcement officers were fighting for their lives, our commander-in-chief was calling not to determine how to best secure the building and the people in it, but to continue to pressure senators to stop the certification process and the peaceful transfer of power. Just as he incited the mob to do earlier in the day. This was a breathtaking dereliction of his duty and of his violation of his oath as our commander-in-chief. Senators, before I hand this over to Manager Castro to walk through the rest of the day, please let me make one final point. These attackers stood right where you are. They went on that rostrum. They rifled through your desks, and they desecrated this place. And literally, the president sat delighted, doing nothing to help us, calling one of you to pressure you to stop the certification. It can't be that the commander-in-chief can incite a lawless, bloody insurrection and then utterly fail in his duty as commander-in-chief to defend us from the attack, to defend our law enforcement officers from that attack, and just get away with it. Donald Trump abdicated his duty to us all. We have to make this right. And you can make it right.
My fellow manager, David Cicilline, showed you what President Trump did and did not do in those Joaquin first critical Castro. Hours of the attack. He sent a tweet at 1:49 p.m. where he reposted a video of the speech that incited the attack. And he called a senator to ask him to delay the certification as the senator was being evacuated for his own safety. We left off around 2:15 p.m. At this point, insurgents were inside the Senate and the House, and the Senate had been evacuated for everyone's safety. And as you saw, Vice President Mike Pence and his family even had to be evacuated for their safety. Now, you'll recall, Donald Trump had made Vice President Pence a target. He attacked the vice president at the rallies, in speeches, and on Twitter. And during President Trump's speech that morning of the attack, he ramped it up again after privately pressuring Mike Pence in front of thousands in the crowd. He called Mike Pence out 11 times, including saying, quote, "Mike Pence, I hope you're going to stand up for the good of our Constitution and for the good of your country. And if you're not, I'm going to be disappointed in you. I will tell you right now." And this was the crowd's response to Donald Trump's days of relentless attacks on his own vice president. By 2:15 p.m., the crowd was chanting in unison, "Hang Mike Pence," outside the very building he'd been evacuated from with his family. Now, even if President Trump didn't know that his inflammatory remarks about his vice president would result in chants of "Hang Mike Pence," by 2:15 p.m., he surely knew. The attack was all over television. They were doing this out in the open. This was a vice president whose life, whose family's life, was being threatened by people whom the president had summoned to the Capitol. And what did President Trump do in response? Did he stop? Did he tell his base, no, don't attack my vice president? Even when President Trump knew what his words were causing, he didn't do any of those things to stop the crowd. In fact, he did the opposite. He fueled the fire. At 2:24 p.m., he tweeted, quote, Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done to protect our country and our Constitution. USA demands the truth. Over an hour and a half into the attack, and this is what he tweeted. And he still, even at this point, did not acknowledge the attack on the Capitol, let alone condemn it. Instead, he further incites the mob against his own vice president, whose life was being threatened. Well, some of you may say, well, who was paying attention anyway? Well, that mob was paying attention.
Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done to protect our country and our Constitution, giving states a chance to certify a corrected set of facts, not the fraudulent or inaccurate ones which they were asked to previously certify. U.S. demands the truth.
The insurgents amplified President Trump's tweet attacking the vice president with a bullhorn. They were paying attention. And they also followed instructions. In fact, the insurgents were at one point, as you saw, 60 feet away from the vice president and the vice president's family. Some of these insurgents were heard saying, quote, that they hope to find Vice President Mike Pence and execute him by hanging him from a Capitol Hill tree as a traitor. And then they erected a gallows with a noose. This is what Donald Trump incited. Please take a close look at that picture. It harkens back to our nation's worst history of lynching. A president's words have the power to move people to action. These were the results. And why did the president incite such rage against the vice president? He was fulfilling his constitutional duty, as we all were that day. Vice presidents in this country have been carrying out this constitutional duty, overseeing the certification of the election results, without incident, without contest, without a word, for the entirety of our nation. It's part of our peaceful transition of power in the United States. And the vice president said he reviewed the Constitution and he could not block certification as President Trump wanted him and was pressuring him to do. He told the president in a letter that morning, a few hours before President Trump's tweet, quote, "I will approach this moment with a sense of duty and an open mind, setting politics and personal interests aside, and do my part to faithfully discharge my duties, our duties, under the Constitution. I also pray that we will do so with humility and faith." And the president's response to that statement was to attack Mike Pence while he was with his family under the threat of a violent mob. The vice president was following his faith, his duty, and his oath to our nation. And the vice president and I don't agree on too much in politics, but he's a man who upholds his oath, his faith, his duty, and most of all, upholds the Constitution. And Mike Pence is not a traitor to this country. He's a patriot. And he and his family, who was with him that day, didn't deserve this. Didn't deserve a president unleashing a mob on them, especially because he was just doing his job. As this was unfolding and the crowd grew more violent, the president, of course, was not alone at the White House. And the people closest to him, his family and advisors, who saw this unfolding in real time, begged him, implored him to stop the attack. An aide to Mark Meadows, the president's chief of staff, urged his boss to go see the president, saying, quote, "They are going to kill people. They're going to kill people." That's what those around President Trump feared. And still, nothing. It wasn't until 2:38 p.m., nearly 2 hours after the start of the siege, that Donald Trump even acknowledged the attack. And when he finally did acknowledge the attack, here's what he said. On the right, you'll see what had been happening prior to that tweet and as he sent the tweet. And on the left, you'll see exactly what he tweeted.
I'm going to stop you there for just one moment because we do have some breaking news. We want to bring in congressional correspondent Chad Pergram as this is just all developing right now. Chad, I understand the Capitol is now on lockdown.
They're definitely fired up. The chant, by the way, I heard the most today was "Fight for Trump." And that's clearly what many of them feel they're doing.
That's what our president saw unfolding in real time, broadcast all over television. And this is what he tweeted at 2:38 p.m. Quote, "Please support our Capitol Police and law enforcement. They're truly on the side of our country. Stay peaceful." And much has been made of the fact that in this tweet, he says, "Stay peaceful." Senators, stay peaceful? Think about that for a second. These folks were not peaceful. They were breaking windows, pushing through law enforcement officers, waving the flag as they invaded this Capitol building. This was a violent, armed attack. Stay peaceful? How about stop the attack? Stop the violence? Stay peaceful? How about you say, immediately leave? Stop. And he said, please support our law enforcement. How about he actually support our law enforcement by telling these insurgents to leave the Capitol immediately, which he never did. He didn't. Because the truth is, he didn't want it to stop. He wanted them to stay and to stop the certification. And his failure had grave and deadly consequences. By 2:45 p.m., the warnings were tragically proven correct. Ashley Babbitt was shot by an officer as she tried to break through a glass door to reach the speaker's lobby. At this point, the pleas to Donald Trump, publicly and privately, grew even more desperate. At 2:54 p.m., Alyssa Farah, a former strategic communications director, begged the president, quote, "Condemn this now. You're the only one they will listen to for our country."
Well, damn it. Sometimes you have to restart the restart
the
video.
Tell these folks to go home. At 3:06 p.m., Rep. McCarthy appeared on Fox News. Here's what he said.
"I could not be sadder or more disappointed with the way our country looks at this very moment. People are getting hurt. Anyone involved in this, if you're hearing me, hearing very loud and clear, this is not the American way."
He's saying on Fox News, which the president watches, this is not the American way. Stop the attack. Representative Gallagher at 3:11 p.m., while secured in his own office, posted a video to Twitter.
"Mr. President, you have got to stop this. You are the only person who can call this off. Call it off."
And then, when the president didn't answer his pleas on Twitter, Representative Gallagher went on live television.
"I mean, this is insane. I mean, I've not seen anything like this since I deployed to Iraq in 2007 and 2008. I mean, this is America, and this is what's happening right now. The president needs to call it off. Like, call it off. Call it off."
Representative Gallagher, you see there, said he'd not seen anything like this since he was deployed in Iraq. The message around the president was clear from everyone. You need to call this off. Stop it. But does he? No. His next tweet was not until about 3:13 p.m., Once again, it's important to consider what was happening between Donald Trump's 2:38 p.m. tweet and his next tweet at 3:13 p.m. You'll see footage from the attack during that time on the right and Donald Trump's tweet on the left.
"We've been informed that protesters have penetrated the Capitol here.
This is my fucking building. Hey, we got a fucking attitude problem over here.
Tell you, the sentiment in the streets is really getting to a different level. This is spinning out of control. This is turning violent. This is getting dangerous.
You're America. Not one idea. Don't touch me, don't.
Get the fuck out of here."
This isn't 10 minutes into the insurrection. This isn't just after his speech earlier that day. That's what our commander-in-chief saw happening. And that was his response. You'll notice one of the things he says to his mob, to these insurrectionists, rather than to stop or to leave, was to say thank you. Thank you. Thank you for what? Thank you for shattering the windows and destroying property? Thank you for injuring more than 140 police officers? Thank you for putting in danger all of our lives and the lives of our families? How about instead of thank you, Donald Trump on that day acted like our commander-in-chief and stopped this as only he could and told those people to leave. And here's what former Governor Chris Christie, his very good friend, said after that tweet.
Pretty simple. The president caused this protest to occur. He's the only one who can make it stop. What the president said is not good enough. The president has to come out and tell his supporters to leave the Capitol grounds and to allow the Congress to do their business peacefully. And anything short of that is an abrogation of his responsibility.
He's right. Chris Christie is right. We know how Donald Trump acts on Twitter and otherwise when he has a message to convey. In fact, I asked you to remember those tweets earlier this morning when he yelled on Twitter, "Stop the count." When he wanted to incite his supporters to show up on January 6th, President Trump tweeted 16 times between midnight on January 5th and his noon rally speech the next day. 16 times to get them to do something he wanted. And his message in those 16 times was clear. Fight. Stay strong. Be strong. But when the violence started, he never once said the one thing everyone around him was begging him to say. Stop the attack. He refused to stop it. And as Governor Christie and Representative Kinzinger and others made clear, only Donald Trump could have stopped that attack.
You know, a guy that knows how to tweet very aggressively on Twitter, you know, puts out one of the weakest statements in one of the saddest days in American history because his ego won't let him, you know, admit defeat.
He was not just our commander-in-chief. He had incited the attack. The insurgents were following his commands. And we saw when they read aloud this tweet, attacking the vice president. And they confirmed this during the attack, too. Senators, ask yourself this. How easy would it have been for the president to give a simple command, a simple instruction, just telling them, stop, leave? This was a dereliction of duty, plain and simple. And it would have been for any president who had done that. And that brings me to my next point. You heard from my colleagues that when planning this attack, the insurgents predicted that Donald Trump would command the National Guard to help them. And there's a lot that we don't know yet about what happened that day. But here's what we do know. Donald Trump did not send help to these officers who were badly outnumbered, overwhelmed, and being beaten down. 2 hours into the insurrection, by 3 p.m., President Trump had not deployed the National Guard or any other law enforcement to help, despite multiple pleas to do so. President Donald Trump was at the time our Commander-in-Chief of the United States of America. He took a solemn oath to preserve, protect, and defend this country, and he failed to uphold that oath. In fact, there's no indication that President Trump ever made a call to have the Guard deployed or had anything to do with the Guard being deployed when it ultimately was. And shortly after 3:04 p.m., the acting defense secretary announced that the Guard had been activated and listed the people he spoke with prior to this activation, including Vice President Mike Pence, Speaker Pelosi, Leader McConnell, Senator Schumer, and Representative Hoyer. But that list did not include the president. This omission of his name was reportedly not accidental. According to reports, quote, Trump initially rebuffed requests to mobilize the National Guard and required interference by other officials, including his own White House counsel. And later, quote, as a mob of Trump supporters breached police barricades and seized the Capitol, Trump reportedly was, quote, disengaged in discussions with Pentagon leaders about deploying the National Guard to aid the overwhelmed U.S. Capitol Police. President Trump was reportedly, and I quote, completely, totally out of it. He made no attempt to reach the National Guard, and it was Vice President Pence, still under the threat for his life, who reportedly spoke to the Guard. President Trump's conduct confirms this too. At no point on January 6 did Donald Trump even reference the National Guard. The only thing that we heard connecting the president to the Guard was from his press secretary, who tweeted about the Guard being deployed at the president's direction over half an hour later at 3:36 p.m. And we have seen what Donald Trump does when he tries to take credit for something. And yet, even when the National Guard was finally deployed, he didn't even acknowledge it. In fact, he didn't say a word about the National Guard the entire day. Think about that. The bloodiest attack we've seen on our Capitol since 1812, and our president couldn't be bothered to even mention that help was on its way. These insurgents had been attacking our government for over 4 hours by that point, and we may have been the target, but it was the brave men and women who protect our Capitol who were out there combating thousands of armed insurgents in a fight for their lives. And that's who Donald Trump left entirely unprotected.
Hold the line! Hold the line! Let's get there!
This is hard to watch, but I think it's important we understand what the Capitol Police were facing, how severely they were outnumbered, while our commander-in-chief, whose job it was to protect and defend them, was just watching, doing nothing for hours, refusing to send help. If he wanted to protect these officers, if he cared about their safety, as he tweeted about, he would have told his supporters to leave. He would have sent help right away. And one brave officer was killed. Others took their lives after the attack. More than 140 police officers were injured, including cracked ribs, smashed spinal discs. One officer will lose an eye. Another was stabbed with a metal fence stake. They were completely and violently overwhelmed by a mob and needed help. And our commander-in-chief, President Trump, refused to send it. Senators, you've seen all the evidence so far, and this is clear. On January 6th, President Trump left everyone in this Capitol for dead. For the next hour, after President Trump's 3 p.m. tweet, he still did nothing. Not until 4:17 p.m., over 3.5 hours after the violence started, did our president send a message finally asking the insurgents to go home. On the right, you'll see what happened that day in the hours leading up to his pre-recorded video. On the left, you'll see his message. Let's watch.
I know your pain. I know you're hurt. We had an election that was stolen from us. It was a landslide election, and everyone knows it, especially the other side. But you have to go home now. We have to have peace. We have to have law and order. We have to respect our great people in law and order. We don't want anybody hurt. It's a very tough period of time. There's never been a time like this where such a thing happened, where they could take it away from all of us, from me, from you, from our country. This was a fraudulent election, but we can't play into the hands of these people. We have to have peace. So go home. We love you. You're very special. You've seen what happens. You see the way others are treated that are so bad and so evil. I know how you feel. But go home and go home in peace.
This is the first time our commander-in-chief spoke publicly at all since the attack began, over the 3.5 hours after it started. And these are the entirety of the words the president spoke out loud to the American people or to the attackers that entire day. Nowhere in that video, not once, did he say, "I condemn this insurrection. I condemn what you did today." Nowhere did he say, "I'm sending help immediately. Stop this." Here's what he said instead. "I know your pain. I know you're hurt. We had an election that was stolen. Even after all the things we witnessed, even after all of that carnage, he goes out and tells the same big lie. The same big lie that enraged and incited the attack. He repeated this while the attack was ongoing and while we were still under threat. And here's what else he said. "Go home in peace. We love you. You're very special. Senators, you were here. You saw this with your own eyes. You faced that danger. And when President Trump had an opportunity to confront them as the leader of us all, as our commander in chief, what did he tell them? We love you. You're very special." This was not a condemnation. This was a message of consolation, of support, of praise. And if there's any doubt that his supporters, these insurgents, took this as a message of support and praise, watch for yourselves.
Donald Trump asked everybody to go home. He just put out a tweet. It's a minute long. He asked everybody to go home.
Why do you think so?
Because, dude, we won the day. We fucking won.
How did we win?
Well, we won by sending a message to the senators and the congressmen. Yeah, we won by sending a message to Pence, okay, that if they don't do as their oath to do, if they don't uphold the Constitution, then we will remove them from office one way or another.
I suspect you recognize that man. You'll hear him say that we won the day. Who won the day? We know that at least 5 people lost their lives that day. The House and the Senate were in life-threatening danger, and so was the Vice President. And think of everyone else here as well. Who won on January 6th? That's not a win for America, but it is a win for Donald Trump unless we hold him accountable. Now, a little over an hour after that video, the brave members of law enforcement secured the Capitol, and we as a Congress got ready to continue certifying the results of our free and fair election. A half hour after that, President Trump issued another tweet in case there was any doubt as to whether he was happy with the people who did this, as to whether he had incited this. He commemorated what happened on January 6th. At 6:01 p.m. on January 6th, he tweeted, quote, "These are the things and events that happen when a sacred landslide election victory is so unceremoniously and viciously stripped away from great patriots who've been badly and unfairly treated for so long," ending with, "Remember this day forever." My colleague, Manager Cicilline, started with this tweet because this tweet shows exactly how Donald Trump felt about what happened on January 6th. These are the things that happened. He's saying this was foreseeable. He's saying, "I told you this was going to happen if you certified the election for anyone else, and you got what you deserved for trying to take my power away. Great patriots, go home with love and in peace. Remember this day forever." He's saying to them, "You did good." He's not regretful. He's not grieving. He's not sad. He's not angry about the attack. He's celebrating it. He's commemorating it. This is the entirety of what President Trump said to the public once the attack began. Five tweets and a pre-recorded video. "On the day of the most bloody insurrection we faced in generations, our commander-in-chief, who's known for sending 108 tweets in a normal day, sent five tweets and a pre-recorded video." That is the entirety of President Trump's public statements from when the attack began until he went to bed on January 6th. That's all he did, despite all the people we know who begged him to preserve, protect, and defend. That was our commander-in-chief's response. He began the day with, quote, "Our country has had enough. We will not take it anymore." And that's what this is all about. And he ended the attack, letting us know that we got what he forewarned that morning. We will, of course, each of us, remember that day forever, but not in the way that President Trump intended. Not because of the actions of these violent, unpatriotic insurrectionists. I'll remember this day, that day forever, because despite President Trump's vicious attempts throughout the day to encourage the siege and block the certification, he failed. At 8:06 p.m., the Senate gaveled into session, and the counting of the electoral votes continued. About an hour later, the House followed suit. And close to 4 a.m., after spending a significant part of the day evacuated or on the floor or hiding, this great body fulfilled the will of the people and certified the Electoral College vote. And I'm proud to be part of Congress. I'm proud that we ensured that the will of the American people finally prevailed on that day. And I'm proud that I and everyone in this room abided by our oath of office, even if the president didn't abide by his. And President Trump, too, took an oath as president. He swore on a Bible to preserve, protect, and defend. And who among us could honestly say they believe that he upheld that oath? And who among us will let his utter dereliction of duty stand?
Mr. President, the managers are prepared to recess for the evening and to finish our opening statement tomorrow.
Mr. President. Mr. President,
Majority Leader,
pursuant to impeachment rule 16, I make a motion. Statements were attributed to me moments ago by the House impeachment managers. Statements relating to the content of conversations between a phone call involving President Trump and Senator Tuberville were not made by me. They're not accurate, and they're contrary to fact. I move pursuant to Rule 16 that they be stricken from the record.
Pursuant to Senate Resolution 47...
That was constitutional lawyer Mack Lee,
parties,
Utah.
Presentations are not limited to the record provided for in Section 1 of that resolution.
Mr. President,
I appeal the ruling of the chair.
I couldn't hear what he said.
I appeal the ruling of the chair, Mr. President.
Mr. President, right here, we might as well hear clearly what the ruling of the chair was. So if you would repeat that.
Of course, I will. And pursuant to Senate Resolution 47, Section 4, the party's presentations are not limited.
There you go. It's on now.
Pursuant to Senate Resolution 47, Section 4, parties' presentations are not limited to the record provided for in Section 1 of that resolution. The senator from Utah has appealed that ruling. Is that correct?
Yes, I have.
And the yeas and nays have been requested.
And what is the question? Is it shall the ruling of the chair be sustained? Is that the question?
Yes.
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 Whether the ruling of the chair with respect to
And what, may I ask, is the ruling of the chair? My point was not about whether it's appropriate for them to make characterizations. My point was to strike them because they were false.
Well, you're free to take the oath and become a witness, Mr. Senator Lee.
47 applies to this situation is correct.
The question is whether Senate Resolution 47, Section 4, is correct. The party's presentations are not limited to the record provided for in Section 1 of that resolution.
Mr. President, that is not my motion. You've ruled on a motion. You've ruled on something that was not what I moved. What I asked was, statements were attributed to me repeatedly, as to which I have personal knowledge because I am the source. They are not true. I never made those statements. I asked that they be stricken. This has nothing to do with whether or not they're based on depositions, which they're not. It's simply based on the fact that I'm the witness. I'm the only witness. Those statements are not true, and I ask that you strike them.
President.
Let him rule.
It's fascinating.
Mr. President.
No, who's talking? Joe. What is he doing?
The yeas and nays were asked for on an appeal.
Could. Mr. President.
The Senate will vote on the appeal of the ruling of the chair that this.
So is he afraid that the maggots are going to love him less? Does he seem, is Mike Lee afraid that he's going to be seen as insufficiently loyal?
The yeas and nays have been asked for.
The yeas and nays have been requested.
Let him explain. Please let him explain, Mr. President. Why is it false? What was not false? What was false about it?
Mr. President, I ask unanimous consent to answer the Senator's question.
The debate is not in order under Senate Resolution 47, Section 4. Party's presentation not limited to the record provided for in Section 1 of that resolution. And that has been appealed. The yeas and nays have been requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Ms. Baldwin. Mr. Barrasso. Mr. Bennett.
Point of clarification. Point. What is the question?
Oh, Jesus. I think they're getting a little tired.
Yeah, we're not allowed to here. Yes?
I suggest the absence of a quorum while we work this out.
Clerk will call the roll. No objection. Clerk call the roll.
Ms. Baldwin.
All right, so we're going to have some roll calling. Let's check in with the group here. We got about 25 minutes left in the program. Just get your thoughts.
What in the holy hell is that?
Okay, let's.
What were the statements that he was bitching about?
Well, the statements he was complaining. In the presentation, they noted that Nitwit Nero called. He thought he was calling Tommy the Tuber. And instead, he dialed constitutional scholar Mike Lee of Utah. And things were stated as to what Mike Lee said in that moment. And it was further stated that there was not one but two calls. The first call came from Trump himself. The second call came from Rudy Giuliani. And so there's a recording of that. But in relation to the call from Mike Lee, what he's trying to do is get the remarks stricken, because I think the argument was made that in that call to Mike Lee, Trump never said to end it or anything else like that. And so it puts Mike Lee in arguably a position of complicity, and he wants that stricken. I think.
Well, that's what I got.
Do
we have a
that sounds about right.
No, programmer the out in the Horn family
it's
community.
Just the opposite.
Okay, it's the opposite,
it has nothing
Steve.
To do with that. It's the opposite. What he's saying is, I didn't say that, therefore it should be stricken, which is bullshit. Because in a trial, if somebody testifies to something you said, you object as hearsay. And if you don't object, you've waived the objection. So then the next remedy is, okay, fine, we're going to have you testify, and then you say what you said. And then the jury gets to weigh the credibility of each.
Precisely. What he's trying to do, actually, I don't think you're disagreeing with me, Steve. What he's trying to do is enter a backdoor hearsay objection that he can't otherwise make. Because this entire presentation has been hearsay. Within the hearsay. Classical meaning of the rules of evidence, it has been hearsay. But all that hearsay. Shits right. out the that shits out the window in with this trial. Because they're operating according to Senate rules, not the federal rules of evidence.
But and the other thing too, think of it this way, Robin. If anybody could say, I never said that, therefore it should be stricken. Well, shit. Anyone can say, I didn't say that. That's not how you go about it. If you didn't say it, fine. You know, the fact of the matter is this, is you get the test of credibility, or you say, fine, how about we call witnesses? How about that, geniuses?
As the House manager was giving that section, recounting that call, what, if anything, on the graphics was given as a source of the conversation that was referenced? I believe it was reporting of the New York Times, if I am remembering what I was watching. But I may be wrong. There may have been another source that recounted the contents of the call.
They're using all kinds of sources.
I'm trying to figure out why he sounded so defensive. That was an awfully angry
Because
response.
It looks bad for him, Megan. It makes him look like an insufficiently loyal maggot.
He's giving that classic defense, I know you think you understood what I said, but what you heard is not what I meant, defense.
Oh, Jesus.
And so since he can't use something like a Rule 401 hearsay objection, instead he's using a Senate mechanism of a motion to strike a remark.
Right.
I insist that the scandalous, salacious, slanderous remarks of the senator be stricken from the record. My honor has been impugned.
God.
I mean, I think. Okay, I think they're talking again. Hold on.
It's
Mr. Raskin for a brief statement.
Impeachment manager, Mr. Cicilline, correctly and accurately quoted a newspaper account, which the distinguished senator has taken objection to, so we're happy to withdraw it. On the grounds that it is not true, and we are going to
repeated it too.
Okay, we're going to withdraw it this evening, and without any prejudice to the ability to resubmit it, if possible, and then we can debate it if we need it. But it's not. This is much ado about nothing because it's not critical in any way to our case.
You're not the one being cited as a witness, sir. All right.
So it's with.
Yeah, Lee thinks he's
so
somebody.
The manager's issue stands. Mr. Lee has withdrawn his request, and we may relitigate it tomorrow if we have to. I now ask unanimous consent the trial adjourn until 12 noon tomorrow, Thursday, February 11th, and this also constitute the adjournment of the Senate.
The objection without objection, so ordered. Senate stands adjourned.
Ooh.
Lord have mercy.
That was weird.
Glad that's over.
It's the petulance of a little shit eater like Mike Lee that stands out in this. I got quoted by the New York Times, and they don't tell no truth. My God Almighty. I'm sorry, wrong accent, but you understand why, right?
Well, again, it comes down to witnesses. Who were parties on that call? Mike Lee and Trump. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well,
trying to reach Tommy the
Tuberville. Let's go.
Trying to reach Tommy the Tuber.
He butt dialed the wrong senator.
Was he speaking of Lee or Tommy? Because I thought they said that he was trying to reach Tuberville, but got Lee's office, and Lee handed the phone to Tuberville.
Right. He didn't get Lee's office. He got Lee's cell phone.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he butt-dialed Lee when he was trying to dial Tuberville. And go figure
that. I mean, we've all got cell phones, right?
Yeah.
And our cell phones all have address books in them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And names.
So he's obviously not dialing this from the alphabetical list because L is nowhere near T. Nor is M near T. M for Mike, T for Tommy, T for Tuber. So that means that, hold on.
All right.
This actually has some meaning because it means that he was dialing from his recents list.
Yep.
Okay. And that means that he had been in previous contact, engaging in a criminal fucking conspiracy with members of the Senate of the United States.
Yeah, that goes to why he was calling Tuberville in the first place, was to raise objections to the certification of the electoral vote.
They were involved in a criminal conspiracy.
Yeah.
And Mike Lee doesn't want to have any part of it now.
Right.
Does he just want to look like a good maggot bootlicker? Because it seems like he's more concerned with the latter.
There's some of that, but he's being rather strenuous about it, and I suspect it's because he does not want to be associated with the criminal conspiracy that went on to make this thing continue, because the way the House managers are putting it, Cicilline put it, is that it was Raskin said it's not central to our case, it doesn't really matter. They wouldn't have used it if it didn't matter. They have limited amounts of time, and this thing is as finely honed as a damned haiku, okay?
It's out there now, isn't it?
And the cat's out of the bag. And the only hope that Mike Lee now has is to get it stricken from the record. Mike Lee is scared. That's why he sounded so strident. He is frightened.
I told you.
He's well, you can hear it in
his ship and Scylla and Charybdis. Yep, he knows it.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Megan.
No, I just said he's caught between the Scylla and Charybdis. He's on Odysseus's ship, and that's it. That was a allusion to the weird metaphor.
Yep.
If you
hey,
play
Robin?
Back the,
yes, Sparky.
Play back the audio. Hit the pitch
aren't
of
Mike
his
Lee
voice,
and Ted Cruz butt buddies?
Oh yeah, they're big pals.
Well. You can pull a string and you start finding senators hanging on that string.
Yes. What we're going to find out over the course of this, without any formal accusations being made, is that some of these senators were part of the conspiracy.
I think so too. And you could hear in the audio, if you play back the audio of Mike Lee's voice, the pitch of his voice went up, indicating his stress level and his franticness. It's the frantic nature of his objection, because he was running the numbers in his head and knew where that string led.
Because you have to understand something here, and that's this. The maggot senators felt like, or still feel like, if that insurrectionist mob had gotten into the Senate chambers and they had been there, they would have been untouched. And people like Mike Lee and Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, are the kind of people that would stand gleefully by with a shit-eaten grin on their face while their colleagues, their Democratic colleagues, were maimed and slaughtered, hanged, beaten, murdered. Aw, gee, aw, look, aw, dang it. They're, how about that? They just slit Bernie Sanders' throat. Son of a gun, too bad, huh? Aw, darn, look at them. Aw, they're, aw, shoot. They're over there raping poor Dianne Feinstein. Too bad she didn't support Trump. See? That was truly their... I'm convinced of it. And yeah, meanwhile, poor Patrick Leahy was a little bit flummoxed there. All right, who threw me out of the phone call? The fuck? There we go. Okay, so turn your video off. There we go. Now I... But that's who they are. Let's try this again. Turn the video off. John, turn your video off, buddy.
Okay, I got it.
So far, not so much. But does that make sense? Am I by myself?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm here. I
got you, Bob.
This little, I don't know who this person is, but that's, he's got his video on.
That's John. And John, if you would be so kind, please to turn your video off.
I thought it was me for a second, but I shaved my beard.
The way that Lee responded was the response of a guilty man. That may turn out to be more of a dramatic event than what we thought at first. Because, see, somebody whispered in his ear while the presentations were taking place. And it's trouble. Because see, law enforcement is not precluded from using anything that comes out in these proceedings in a potential criminal prosecution. And you are not.
I was going to ask you that.
You're not immune. You're not immune from prosecution just because you're a senator. And that was not something. That's not speech and debate clause stuff, because it was not uttered in the course of speech and debate in the Senate. Yeah, as Arthur put it, I move that the video of me fueling the getaway car in the bank robbery be stricken. That's exactly it. Jeremy pointing out, as to Mike Lee, them magic underwear are in danger of bursting into flames. Yes, they are. But these are all homicidal maniacs. You know, bless their hearts, the house managers are appealing to a sense of patriotism that these fuckers don't have. They love power. And the way they achieve power is through their party. And power and party are all that matters to a Ted Cruz, a Mitch McConnell, a Mike Lee. The United States of America could burn right up as long as they held power. Oh, and by the way, we've been largely silent tonight because this is so compelling. It's riveting. And I figure everybody else was watching it too, so I apologize that, you know, it's basically just the podcast will just be a replay of what went on, but there are people who
we had to choose what speed we were going to listen to.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't watching it at all until listening to you.
But anyway, we're going to be like 960 tomorrow for fundraising. I'm just throwing that out there. So if we could get Monday, Monday? Yeah. Oh, so today's Saturday. Yeah, if we could get Monday finished off, that $60, that would be wonderful. And keep it, you know, under the $900 mark. But anyway, that's where we stand with all of that.
Hey, Robin, I emailed you. I don't know if you saw the email. What really struck me about the potato head call, this was after when Shitbag and his attorney, this thing had been going for an hour. They were trying to get them to turn it up. They were fomenting it.
Yes.
I mean, this is 100 billion times worse than it ever appeared on January 6th.
In real time, we had no idea.
We had no idea.
But the one thing, and maybe it'll come out, maybe it'll be part of the case they make. Donald Trump's behavior on January 6th was no different than Donald Trump's behavior with the Central Park Five.
Right.
Even after they were shown to be not guilty, he was still hollering for them to be murdered in cold blood by the state.
Right.
There's never anything that Donald Trump does that he doesn't have a history of having done before.
Yeah. The only difference here is he was the fuel and the match, and he knew it. Oh.
Yeah.
This is the Reichstag. This is a Reichstag fire, Robin.
Yeah. Somebody.
This is that.
Yeah. It is. And I got a note here.
This is not an exaggeration.
I got a note here from Mark in Boulder that might, and you having worked in D.C., you'll understand where Mark's coming from, Steve. I'm writing in a hurry right now because I'm doing some video editing. I hope I'm understandable. Yes, the Trumpanzee maggots are in willful denial, and they're totally too fucking stupid and face down in the Fool-Aid to think rationally and understand any of this. I agree with Megan that this is to put on the record for the world. And this presentation is essential to the historical record. I worked permanently as a network TV field news cameraman in Washington, D.C. I worked for about 10 years at ABC News and then for about 5 years at Al Jazeera English. I've been out of D.C. now for about 5 years. At present, I'm suffering from quite a bit, of PTSD. Watching today's videos presented by the House impeachment managers, I know all these locations, entrances, tunnels, attics, cafeterias, technical operation rooms, office buildings, interviews, stand-up locations that I've been watching today, and I saw it on TV January 6th. I feel pain in my entire being. PTSD is a feeling that shreds one's body and soul. It's just as horrible as being at the Pentagon just after the plane hit and being the network pool cameraman who went to the impact site with the military brass on the evening of. I still have many friends who still work there and do an honorable job. The Capitol Police have always been good to us and good to visitors and others at the Capitol. I believe you and others about your encounters with them that have been negative. Can you imagine the video that would have been shown around the world of a sea of red blood if the police would have started blowing away the Trump domestic terrorists? I think the Capitol Police went well beyond their duty in all of this horror. They exercised way more restraint than I would if I had a gun and was assigned to defend the Capitol. And the Capitol Police are the law enforcement agency that is totally under the control of Congress. I've heard reports that some of the maggot Trumpanzee senators aren't even looking at the video monitors. They're not. They're doing everything short of trimming their fucking toenails. They're showing up without socks. Two members, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and Josh Hawley, are literally sitting in the Senate gallery instead of on the floor of the Senate. I'm not sure you know the cameras and sound in both the Senate and House are totally controlled by each of the chambers and not C-SPAN or anyone else except the State of the Union and mostly nothing else. Mark continues, at the State of the Union, we take the feed from the Senate or the gallery and have several other cameras and mics in the chamber that a network pool controls. Mark adds, closing, I'm so happy that you're following the path that is true to you. Thank you, Mark. And I'm grateful for the community you host. Thank you again. Sorry for the rambling. I'm going to have a drink and finish my editing project. I think it's well-deserved. And, yeah, PTSD, Jesus. I mean, it is traumatic to watch this stuff. I mean, I know what it does to me. I know what it does to Steve. Anybody who's worked on Capitol Hill at all, it's painful to see. Because as fucked up as our government can seem to be, when you're in there and you're working in the halls of those buildings and in and out of the offices, there's a certain majesty to it. It compels a certain amount of respect. You don't go running down the halls hooting and hollering. You behave like you are in a secular temple because you are. Does that jibe with you, Steve?
Muted. Yes, it does. Right. Sorry about that. I was on mute.
That's okay.
You know what it used to get me? Because I got very much interested in the history of it because I had to do tours when I was a member of staff.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually really got into it. Most of the staff hated it. I really got into it. So I read a lot of shit about what was where. And, you know, I know Justice Taney was a scumbag. But to walk into that old Supreme Court chamber and look there and think, these people we read about in our history books were here. They walked these aisles. They walked these halls. They breathed this air. They looked at the things I'm looking at right now.
You can visualize the ghost.
Yeah.
Well, many of them still inhabit the place. I mean, their lives and their record and their work are infused in the structure and the place itself. I don't mean to wax poetic about it, but
no, it's absolutely true. I mean, I remember going through the Capitol Museum, that's, you know, down there beneath now, and being and in the museum. Feeling a sense of being awestruck. when I was looking at the desk of John Quincy Adams, whereon he composed by hand, quill pen, parchment, you know, his objections to the institution of slavery, and was punished for it by the Southern-controlled House of Representatives. Adams is the only president to go back into the Congress. And he was arguably more profound as a member of the House than he was as president. And yeah, to see that desk, it matters. It means things. And these goddamn maggots came in and profaned the place. They literally shit on the floors of our house. They pissed in our temple. And that's why I keep saying, and I guess maybe it gets a little broken recordy, but that's why I say, you find the name of every single damned individual there and you charge them with fucking something. Or this failed insurrection will indeed be a rehearsal.
And in addition, or next to the level of awe that one feels in that place, there's also the everyday workaday level of understanding that people go to their jobs there. They punch in and day out. People who were not elected, but who are there to support in whatever way that they're paid to support, whether they're on the congressional or the Senate staffs, whether they're the policemen guarding the place and keeping them safe, or whether they're the ladies and gentlemen that sweep the floors at the end of the day.
Oh, you know, I think about the people who work down in those cafeterias.
Making the bean soup,
and over on the House side, it used to be the best macaroni and cheese in Washington, D.C.
And, you know, it's funny in watching this, not funny, ha-ha, but it dawned on me that the day that all of this unfolded, January 6th, I was out and about running errands and listening to either CNN or MSNBC. So I only got the audio in real time. And then in the weeks since January 6th, I've only seen the various reports from people who were there and were hiding under their desks and in locked bathrooms. But today, watching it, it's like a finely woven fabric. And when you add the timeline, the structure of the case, and then the timeline, and then the video and the audio and the visuals, it's chilling. It's gut-wrenching. It's horrifying.
It's riveting.
Riveting, yes. And yet there will be, 46, 48, 49, 50 GOP senators who will have their feet up on the desk. In the case of Rand Paul, that thing on his head will have slipped down to cover his eyes so he could have a nap. And here we are, kids.
And that's what, you know, I'm sure they're going to get to bloviate at the end of the presentations. And it is going to be vomit-inducing to hear the Mike Lees of the world stand up and the Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of the world, stand up and talk about how this is all just a plot to torment poor, poor, poor Donald Trump. Poor baby.
Poor, beleaguered, misunderstood.
Right.
Not appreciated.
And so, you know, going forward, as far as I'm concerned, once this vote has been taken, and once we found out how many senators are unwilling to honor the constitutional oath that they damned well took, I think we probably need to, all future references should be to traitor Mike Lee, traitor Ted Cruz, traitor Josh Hawley. Anyone who votes nay on conviction is actively engaged in sedition against the Constitution of the United States. And that's one, you know, they kept the manager said, you know, he failed to protect us. He failed to protect the Senate. He failed to protect the Capitol. He failed to blah, 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 blah. He failed to protect the Constitution of the United States of America. And that is the real standard of inquiry. But that's me. And I'm cranky.
No, you're not. You're telling it as Howard Cosell said. You're telling it like it is.
And Robin, I'm going to disagree with that.
Oh no.
No, I'm gonna, and I'll tell you why. Because failed to do something isn't what we have here. What we have here? No, I'm kidding. This was not a failure to do something. This was an active subversion of the Constitution.
Okay, I won't fight you over that.
He didn't stand by. He fucking caused it.
That he did.
You know, I don't suffer the PTSD as the guy in Mark in Boulder. But listening to this, I am so angry. Because I have people who continue to support that fucking
shit stain.
Stop there.
Shit stain.
Okay. Yeah. You know, and I've actually told people, I've told friends. I have a guy who I knew from church, very good friend. And he's a former Republican. He can't stand Trump, but he still has Trump pansy friends. And I told him straight up, I said, it's me or them. You are supporting a person. You are supporting people who are in favor of overthrowing this country. It's me or them. And if that's harsh, so fucking be it.
No pushback from me.
I don't want anything to do with this. I don't want anything to do with this. This is not a dereliction of duty. You know.
This is something that would in a different forum be an overt criminal act.
Yes. Treason is not a dereliction of duty. Treason is active measures taken to undermine and overthrow and destroy your not just your government but your country.
Hear, hear.
Well, it's like the old folk song, the Union song. Which side are you on, boys?
Which side are you on?
That's where we're at here.
And let me say, if y'all want to continue the conversation, I think it's well warranted. I just have to close the program out now because, once again, we're still expecting a snowstorm, and I've got to make another run to the settlements for provisions. I've got a new prescription to pick up. I have to get it this evening or I may not get it for a couple of days.
I need to step off and it's not because I don't want to. It's I got to go back in the subway. I had a couple of errands to run. So
understandable. Well, listen, y'all have a good evening. And, I presume we'll probably be watching it this very same way tomorrow too. And I think, you know, I think there's benefit to be had to discuss weird things like Mike Lee's little conniption there, that we couldn't otherwise get. You know, if we were watching it all on C-SPAN or some other network. So thanks, everybody.
What actually happened with that? My phone went out because I went on the subway.
He stood up. What happened? Jamie Raskin stood up and said they would withdraw. And that it could be debated on the morrow if necessary. But I have a feeling by annoying Jamie Raskin, Mike Lee's going to wind up getting it stuck in him and broken off.
He made a note of it, I'm sure. Somebody did.
Yeah.
Look, the fact is you cannot unhear something.
Can't unring a bell. Nope.
No, you can't unring a bell.
All right, you guys have a great evening. I'm going to, like I said, got to go across the river, errands. But thanks, everybody, for joining in. I hope this was at least moderately helpful. We will be at 9:60 tomorrow. Sorry to keep talking about it, but it's how we keep the program going. Thanks to all of you. Thank you to our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal both. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who engage in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve. Thank you to Sparky in the Skype chat. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Malloy at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Wear your gloves if you can get them. If you can get them, get them. Use hand sanitizer liberally. Double mask. Maintain your social distance, 15 feet at least between people wearing masks. And if somebody's not, just don't. Don't be even in their air. And, of course, if somebody comes towards you saying, I moved to strike him remarks, I'm the person who said them and I didn't say them, avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Later.